Hello, Sassafi Flowers. I thought it was a giant dandelion.
I saw a white moth.
I saw a prairie onion. It was purple. A bunch of little flowers.
I saw some turtle legs. They were cracked.
The acorns were starting to form on the oak tree, and they were green.
I saw a brown sparrow that was really small.
I seen milkweed pods.
They were kind of prickly,
and they were small and big.
When we were walking on the trail, we smelled skunk, and I saw skunk footprints.
We saw galls that were forming on leaves.
On the trail, I saw two monarch butterflies.
Thanks for listening. Stay wild.
Indeed, you can't get much more wild than those kids. Look at the things they saw. The tussock caterpillar. And she said it was furry and was blackish, brownish, and probably some yellow on it as well. The tussock moth caterpillars are those ones that are just outlandishly hairy. And they have these tufts. Sometimes the tufts are very tight and stick up. And sometimes they're loose and kind of open, but they are remarkable. And whenever you see one of these really hairy caterpillars, it is probably a tussock caterpillar. There are several, so there are a bunch of different styles, but they all have these mixtures of colors and tufts of hair here and there. They're quite remarkable. Yellow salsafly flowers, they thought were giant dandelions. That's exactly what one would think, seeing salsafy, yeah, easy for you to say. White moth, prairie onion, turtle eggs that were cracked and open. Acorns are forming on the oak trees, and they are green. And that could have been bur oak, or it could have been red oak. The red oak acorns take 2 years to develop, and the acorns on my red oaks are green yet. They aren't brown yet, but they are quite green and will be turning brown in the next couple of weeks. Brown sparrow, milkweed pods, kind of spiky. That is absolutely the truth there. They smelled skunk and saw the footprints. And lots of galls forming on leaves. And then finally, two monarch butterflies. And that's really quite interesting because the monarchs have been really, really strong as far as reproduction and carrying on goes. We're just seeing a great population of them, and it's really quite exciting. They're down a little bit right now, but that's because there are a lot of them that are caterpillars getting ready to go through their chrysalis. We will begin to see them starting toward the end of August. And this next generation is the generation that will fly to Mexico. This is the fourth generation, and it takes four generations. So the great-great-grandchild of the monarch that flew back from Mexico is the one that's going to be flying south to Mexico this year. We've got, we need to tell you that support comes from the Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
This is 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We operate translator K210DR in Brainerd 89.9, and since 1976, we've been telling the stories of the people in the land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KEXE people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word DONATE. 218-326-1234.
We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com. We heard from Todd, who called in from or texted from Brainerd and said, Remind John it's sumac tea season, and in fact, there are some smooth sumac on my right along the beach where I go swimming, and I tasted some this last week, and they were delightfully sour. So if you are interested in trying sumac tea, go out and pick those bright red flower heads and put them in a bag of something that you can catch any detritus that might fall off. Pour hot water over those seed heads and collect the water that comes through, and it will wash off that acid, which is the what makes them sour, and you can make a kind of a nice sour lemonade-like tea from sumac. And we also got a text from...
Yeah, we got a lot of texts coming in.
Oh, well, lay them on me.
Okay, so we heard from Scott S. from Hackensack. He says, I love these tall, spindly yellow flowers I see in roadside ditches this time of year. What can John teach us about them?
Well, the one thing I can teach you is that they are remarkably difficult to identify. No, they're not. For the most part, they are probably tall, or Giganteia would be the species name. They're Helianthus, which is sunflowers. They're wild sunflowers, basically. And there are several. There are four or five that occur here in Minnesota, that big yellow flowers, 3 or 4 inches across, with a sometimes yellow center. The center color is helpful in identifying them. One thing about these plants that makes them confusing is if you are trying to identify them and you go down and look at them, you'll see that the leaves are opposite one another at the base of the plant. But then as the plant grows taller and taller, the leaves begin to come alternate. And usually when you're trying to figure out what plant is which, you look at the leaf arrangement and they're either alternate or opposite. They're not both. But in the case of these tall sunflowers, they are both. And it has to do with whether the stem is hairy and how the leaf feels, et cetera, et cetera. But suffice it to say that they're sunflowers, and tall sunflowers or wild sunflowers is probably close enough for just about anybody. We botanists, we get a little carried away and we waste way too much time trying to figure out if it's the tall one or the showy one or the Maximilian. It's a game that some of us with too much time on our hands play, but let it suffice to know that they are sunflowers.
I'm seeing them in ditches, I think, with mm-hmm. tansy. Are they invasive?
They are not. The okay. tansy is, but yep. they are not.
Okay.
Yeah, they're native. Yeah.
We also heard from Jeff from McGregor, and he sent us a photo, and he thought you might enjoy them, of Monoman or rice ripening in the McGregor area.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And you know, our reporter, Emma, had a nice report.
I think maybe Stella.
Stella.
Emma, right? Yep.
Stella,
We have an Emma.
We got an Emma and a Stella. Stella went out and did a report on wild rice, and she does a nice job describing how to figure out if your rice is ready to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might want to access that. You can go online and find that report for sure and learn a little bit about the wild rice in your neighborhood.
That's for sure.
And you said Tom had called and said that, or sent text yeah. saying that they're falling.
Yeah.
And that's usually, you know it's ripe when it drops off.
We also heard from Rosemary in Meadowlands, sending in a photo saying, found these chanterelles on Saturday. I noticed, Rosemary, you're not telling us where you found them. We know you're from Meadowlands, but...
Yeah, we're on our way. We'll be there in an hour.
Beautiful photo. Yeah. Stop taunting us. But thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah. I've had a really wonderful crop of shiitake mushrooms. I grow them. I promote them and inoculate the logs. But boy, the month of July really was the trigger. The rainfall was enough to really spur them on to growing. And nice. So I've been eating shiitake mushrooms at an amazing rate. There's hardly anything that I'm having these days that doesn't have some mushrooms in it. So,
coming up, we're going to be talking to Tornado Bob, big weather picture. But first, I'd like to thank Dale's Auto Body. They perform auto body and collision repair and auto glass replacement. Dale'sAutoBodyINC.com.
And we receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health care services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
And support also comes from the Minnesota State Fair, the Great Minnesota Get-Together. 12 days of food, entertainment, rides, animals, and family fun starting Thursday, August 27th through Monday, September 7th. mnstatefair.org. It's time to talk weather. Tornado Bob joins us in the studio now. Bob, thanks for being here. Bob Konzemius, our meteorologist and friend.
It's nice to be here.
Hey, Bob.
What's up, John?
I just noticed that my microphone was growing a great big white whisker.
And oh.
I can't imagine where it came from.
Yeah, that's a mystery.
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that.
Don't.
All right. No, I won't.
Don't even get close to it. Yeah. So, pretty nice stretch of weather you brought us. We could use a little bit more rain, and you've been really thoughtful this summer by providing most of the rain at night, which is really, really how I like it.
Good.
I like waking up in the morning and seeing my rain gauge be full of rain, but the sky be full of sun. That's,
how wonderful.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And the clouds are at night, so I can't see any northern lights.
Oh, dang.
It's going to be the same thing like ice skating versus
oh yeah,
snow skiing.
I know.
For us. Yeah.
It's always a struggle.
Yeah, I like snow, like rain in the afternoon. Well, no, none of the, if it's not in the afternoon, I can do my mountain biking and stuff. Mountain bike practice.
Yeah, speaking of mountain biking, how's that going? Are the boys and girls... Is it boys and girls?
Yes. Yeah, we have more girls on the team this year.
Good. Good, good. Yeah.
Not more girls than boys, but just more girls than we've had in the past.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
And I've watched them ride, and reckless abandon doesn't really describe it. It's even worse than that.
Oh, yeah. It's, but it's fun. It's like they just send it down the, you know.
I know. I watched. Like, I'm like, holy Anna.
And you watch somebody pick a line down a hill and you think, okay, well, I can do better at this. And so it's like, it's a good way to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. And as coach, are you responsible for seeing to it that they pick the right line, or do you just sort of turn them loose and say, you know, pick a line, and if it's good, you'll get down quick. And if it's not good, we'll
focus more on the sort of fitness aspects of it. So we'll say, like fitness and trail etiquette. If you have other trailer, I mean, if sometimes we ride other places, not on the single track trails, and you tell, well, you know, if you have walkers and be polite and allow them to go through and interact with other users on the trail as friendly as possible.
That's polite.
When you want to pass somebody and like, say, can I get a pass, please? You know?
Okay.
And stuff like that.
So you catch up to somebody, you're both riding, and this person, you've caught up to me, and I'm riding at a speed where I can kind of control things and not hit trees, and you catch up to me, and the proper etiquette is to just say, may I pass, please?
Yeah.
And then I should, like, fall over and let you go by.
Yeah.
I can
not
do
fall
that.
Over, but find a place, like, that's control where you can do a controlled pullover, because we do that in races too. Like if you're, I will occasionally do a race, and there aren't that many places where it's like open to like just go as fast as you can and get past people. And so you're back on the single track, you have to say like, hey, if usually a lot of people will just like, oh yeah, there's somebody behind me, I better let them by, or they'll ask, you want to pass, you know.
If they don't, you
have to ask.
Okay.
You
know? How are these competitions determined? It's not a mass start.
It's a mass start.
It is?
Yeah. Yep. So what they do, they'll
so
do
it's not like time over a course. It's like,
yeah,
it's like everybody starts and good luck.
Yeah. So there's a start zone where you're out there battling for a position in the single track. And then once you're in the single track, you have to like figure out how to pass people. Sometimes you'll find a little area that's just like, yeah, you can just power past people, but you're going through the weeds a little bit, or just, you know, on the side of, you know, trail might be a little bit wider. There's a little bit of a space where you could get around them very quickly.
I guess knowing the trail would be helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, if I hang back here for another 50 yards, there's a spot where I can get by this person.
Yeah. Stuff like that. But then you're trying to teach this sort of stuff to the kids, and also the fit, you know, learning, just putting in some miles or kilometers, or, doing like hill repeats, the stuff that you like gets you fit and better able to do racing, and just general bike, you know, mechanics of being on the bike, because some of the kids are pretty young and don't have the ability, or don't have that much experience on bike trails.
When do I get off the seat and go back to the back tire? When do I get on the front tire?
Yeah.
How do I hop over these rocks?
How do you see a turn, you know, and then decide you're going to take the turn and lean the bike the right way, be in the ready position. And so there's some things that you can give them tips on how to ride on.
Fascinating.
On the trails.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. What a joy. And the trails are absolutely astonishing. These are things that I dreamt about when I was a kid. We had trails all through the woods by my house, but nothing like this.
No.
We didn't have jumps. We didn't think about jumping. Sometimes somebody would dig a hole in the trail, and then you'd have to figure out a way around it. But
But anyway.
Yeah.
That's going on. And so therefore we, don't like to have thunderstorms in the late afternoon, although normally I do because I'm storm chasing.
Yeah.
recently we've had our rain has been maybe in the early morning hours or overnight.
Has there been a storm to chase recently? Have we had any really dynamic weather?
There are some. Where's the closest one's been? It's mostly out in the Dakotas, Iowa.
Is it
Illinois, like part of Wisconsin?
Is it just hotter there? Is there more instability? What would account for these storms not being in this part of Minnesota?
Minnesota's having kind of a quiet, severe weather year, except for there's a couple of days. You know, it seems like Bemidji still gets hit, unfortunately. And then there's that one morning where, a lot of central Minnesota up towards Grand Rapids got hit. But other than that, there really hasn't. It's been. And then April was, there were several tornadoes in southern Minnesota in April. But beyond that, it seems just like it's been a bit quiet on the severe weather front. It's been below average on the rainfall. So, statewide, we're generally in. Most of the state is in drought, some sort of either abnormally dry or above in drought designation, with the north central and northeastern part of the state being still in severe drought. We just haven't made up our moisture deficit.
No.
Even though it hasn't, the rainfall really hasn't been much below normal locally in Grand Rapids. You know, it's been almost close to normal. So, overall, statewide, it's a little bit on the dry side. And we've had dry years, dry summers before this too. So the accumulated sort of precipitation deficit is not, we're a little bit of a long-term deficit.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it will average out given enough time.
Yeah.
That's what average is.
Yeah,
speaking of average, well, go ahead.
Yeah, but I mentioned that you mentioned last week or during the week, you emailed me some. Data. From...
Yes. A fellow named Jack Jones Jack Johnson sent along a note. We had a conversation earlier, and he sent along a note saying that he had analyzed the weather data from the Forest Service and found that there was like a 10 degree change
in temperature warmer. In September.
Yeah.
And this, it looked like it was just September data. I just saw a
just
graph.
September data. Okay.
Yeah. So, well, I thought, okay, maybe it seems like the fall is maybe warming up more than the spring is.
Yep.
It just anecdotally, that's what it feels like because we've had in the past 15 years more spring. Well, even like going back almost 20 years now, more springs with snowfall, snow cover going in late into the spring.
Yep.
And fall being somewhat warm a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'm the last few years my first frosts are dragging all the way into October.
Yeah,
usually it was for many years it was right around the middle of September. First what I would call a frost, which is below 32. And then killing frost, which is for me below 29.
Yeah, and I also remember some rare occasions where the end of late August would give us a threat of a frost or a freeze. So it's the fall seems like it's been warmer, and so based on what you sent me from Jack and I decided let me look at local records here. So I pulled up the Grand Rapids Forestry Lab. Data for September going back to 1915.
Okay.
I was going to bring it and show you in person, but then of course I get out of here and I remember five other things I'm supposed to bring on errands I'm going to run. And then now I'm like, okay, I forgot the graph.
Yeah.
So, but what it showed was not a 10, it was way less. It was an increase, but it was more like it looks more like 3 degrees.
Okay.
Or something like that. And most of that increase is within the last very recent year or so. If you look at the graph, you see it's like very, very slowly downward from 1950 to and then into the 70s, ever so slightly. And then it kind of, that kind of cancels out. And then the last 25 years, it just does, it kind of points upward more sharply.
Okay.
Especially the last several years.
Mm-hmm. And this is just the month of September.
Yeah.
And we don't know whether Jack was using Grand Rapids data or if he was using...
Well, there's also stationed up near the Marcel Experimental Station. Mm-hmm. It might have been that data, but I'm not sure what it was exactly, but I just saw a graph and it looked like 10 degrees. And in order to get that, you might have to have some sort of local change in the microclimate. Like it maybe the thermometer was in the shade or something like that, or in an open area and then it got wooded. Because open areas open fields tend to drop in temperature. If you have an open flat field, the temperature drops there faster than it would in a wooded area. So, and it can be a change in the land cover, but it looked like the high temperature graphs and the low temperature graphs kind of paralleled each other. So both the highs and lows were changing at the same rate. So, but I'm not sure what's going on there. I can't tell I looked at other stations during the season, different seasons. At for example, Pokegama Dam has a pretty long record, but it has more missing data.
Yeah.
And generally, if you look at a lot of stations in the area, the story is pretty much overall very similar, that the winter still has the greatest increase of temperature.
Okay.
And spring and fall are actually in a lot of don't look that greatly different.
Really?
So spring is defined as meteorological spring, March, April, May. And then meteorological fall is September, October, November. And then winter being June, July, August. Summer being June, July, August. And then winter being December, January, February.
Right.
So, it seems like I would expect an asymmetry between fall and spring. But I didn't see that so much when I looked at the raw data.
Really?
Yeah. So sometimes sometimes we'll have a cold fall, but it hasn't happened in a few years. I think 20, 2023 is the last time I remember seeing snow in October.
Yeah.
A significant amount of snow. We had, in fact, because I remember this because I cross-country ski and I'm involved in snowmaking on a Mount Itasca. And we skied in October that year. Before Halloween, we had at least a couple snowfalls that allowed us to like briefly groom the trails.
Mm-hmm.
And then we even started snowmaking. In fact, on the Alpine Hill too, we might as well start up our snow guns because it was getting down into the upper teens at night one or two times. And it's almost, close to getting the Alpine Hill skiable.
Mm-hmm.
But
that was 23, and that was an anomaly. It wasn't really the pattern over the last 20 years has been for warmer.
This is just September, but October, September, October, November. The data we just talked about was September, but
right.
That showed 3 degrees, but October, November, if you look at the most individual months, maybe it's a different story, but I still suspect that, it still wouldn't be as much as you think it would be. Given that we think falls were warming up faster than springs, the data doesn't show that so much.
Data doesn't support that, even though that is the perception that I have.
Right.
That falls are warmer and longer, more mild going into November. And springs are just the opposite. They're like, will this snow never go?
Maybe spring hasn't changed that much, and it's interspersed with some warmer temp. When it does warm up, we've had some hot ones in there, like 2012.
Yes,
it was a hot spring, and then this past, I don't know. It seems like winters that we have snow cover that, sometimes stays late, but then when it warms up, it just goes ballistic warm.
Right. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be, I remember not last year, 2 years ago, 24, I believe, we had, everybody's waiting for this magic 40-20 high and low.
Yeah.
That sap will run.
Yeah.
And that year there was a brief period early, like in February when that happened. And then it didn't happen again. And then we went from 30-10 to 50-30 instead of having that 40-20 range. And we didn't get a lot of syrup, a lot of sap flow because of that. But I don't know. The overall perception that I carry that seems to be in my mind is that our springs are long and slow to develop into warmer weather. I don't see a lot of 60-degree days. It's like 40, 45, maybe touches 50, and then a week later it's 65, 80. 70, touching 80. Yeah.
If you look at some of the data, there's some warm days sprinkled in there. I don't know. And maybe May makes up for it. You'd have to take a look at April in specifically, because that seems to be the month that like everybody really wants it to warm up and is expecting to warm up, but
April was the month.
Snows.
April was the month that my parents always went south.
It's
winter.
But
April
profile.
Came along. It's like, please stop already. I'm ready for spring.
Yeah. The atmospheric profiles are different in the spring and the fall, because in spring there is there's stronger. Let's see. No, that's why we have meteorological definition the way it is, because it coincides more with the calendar definition of spring and summer lags behind. You don't get summer in the calendar summer until you get to the solstice, where the sun is at its peak heating. But meteorological summer kind of is shifted earlier, because that reflects how the temperature and the weather actually behave. So April, if you look at it, April and October have similar sunshine. But in April, sun's increasing on an upward trend, and the so you're basically have it's helping warm things up at that point because you have this all this accumulated cold that you're trying to burn off. So
yeah,
the sun, you know,
you've got that lag. You've had the earth cold for a long time, and you need to warm it up, the whole thing. You need to warm up the earth. You need to warm up the air above the earth. You need to warm up the trees. Everything's got to be sort of coaxed along to get warm.
Yeah, in October, so
all that heat's there.
All that heat's there and just has to be removed.
Right, yeah.
So if, you know, still thinking that's the process going on. I think you generally get more, seems you get more instability in the atmosphere, more deeply mixed atmospheric motions, most deeply mixed atmospheric temperature. And when you have a well-mixed atmosphere, it limits how much warmer it can really get. So because of that heat gets mixed upward rather than accumulating at the surface.
Yeah.
Whereas you have a stable atmosphere, if you're warming things up over the, the net warming over the column might be the same, but in a stable atmosphere, it may be more concentrated near the ground. So I'm just trying to think about out loud how fall could be perceived to be warmer, warming more than a spring case. But anyway.
It's that same lag.
Yep.
Hey, what's coming?
What is coming?
Should I be looking for my choppers and my parka? Not yet.
No. Pretty moderate weather. In fact, the last I looked, there's a little bit more a difference between, we'll get onto this subject of European models versus American models. Not that one is right now just demonstrably better than the other, but right now they're looking different. The last run of the European that I looked at showed we could get a little bit more return of warmth and moisture, but the American model has the storm track staying south of us, and we're just sort of in a kind of a quiet weather pattern with maybe a little rain here and there.
All right. Well,
but storms will be probably most likely farther south of here. That's the way the pattern is. And so certainly over the next several days, we do have chances of some light rain, but any heavy stuff is going to stay south of us.
Well, keep bringing it on in the evenings and you'll hear no complaints from me.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
Coming up, we'll have the Up North Report with information about today's primary day. And we've got Pam Perry talking birds.
Wonderful. Birds and amphibians.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gigs with GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
Thanks also to Happy Dancing Turtle. They're a nonprofit dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. HappyDancingTurtle.org.
We receive support from Rapids Brewing Company, a place for gathering and community featuring live music multiple times a week, farm fresh food, and rotating beers from their own brew house. More information about their events, music, and menu available at rapidsbrewingco.com.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A person died Saturday while in custody at the St. Louis County Jail. In a news release, St. Louis County Sheriff Gordon Ramsey stated correctional officers in Duluth responded to a medical emergency in a cell around 1 in the morning. Emergency personnel from the Duluth Fire Department and Mayo Ambulance also responded, but the person did not regain consciousness and was pronounced dead. They were not yet identified by the county as of Monday afternoon. By request of the Sheriff's Office, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is conducting an independent investigation. Minnesota's primary election is Tuesday, and nonpartisan civic engagement leaders say they remain appalled by the influence of outside funds flowing into federal races here. They also see a future where state laws could tamp down on this so-called dark money. Watchdogs say this year's midterms are another example of political action committees spending big-time cash on races without having to immediately disclose their underlying sources, including corporations. Mary Hartnett with the group Clean Elections Minnesota says past and recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings make it hard to pull the cover off of this activity.
It's one of the biggest issues that we have in this country. I think it's just been a steady beat and it just continues to get worse.
Election tracking sources say upwards of $20 million has been spent by outside groups on the U.S. Senate race in Minnesota. The ads themselves often include accusations of an opponent leaning too much on this type of support. Hartnett praises Hawaii for adopting a new law that redefines corporate powers, essentially limiting their political spending clout. Hartnett and other supporters are making a similar push in Minnesota amid questions if these laws will lead to costly court battles. The Minnesota bill was introduced this past spring but didn't gain much traction. Supporters like Hartnett hope it'll see new life next session and overcome any arguments about limiting free speech. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. All eligible Minnesota voters are able to participate in the August primary Tuesday for state offices and the U.S. Senate race, but many already have. As of 9 a.m. Monday, local election officials had accepted more than 206,000 absentee and mail ballots for the primary. The Secretary of State's office says this is the highest number of absentee and mail ballots cast before a primary in a non-presidential election year. Find out more about who is on the ballots, plus where they stand on the issues, in our KAXE primary election guide at kaxe.org/election guide. Ahead of Saturday's season opener, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is reminding harvesters that wild rice stands must be ripe to legally harvest. Stella Mayerhoff has more.
Harvesters are ready for the wild rice season to open, but
even though the season opens on August 15th, that does not mean that the rice is ready. It does not mean it's ripe.
That's Minnesota DNR Wildlife Lake Specialist Ann Geisen. Minnesota's green rice law makes it illegal to harvest unripe or green rice. Geisen notes it's the responsibility of the harvesters to check that the rice is ready. She says there are three things to look for. First, the plant's stems and leaves above the water should be brown. Second, a ripe kernel will snap in half. If it bends or emits a milky substance, it's not ready. Finally, the kernel should fall right off when you knock on the plant. Geisen warns that hitting plants too hard has a ripple effect.
The kernels on the plant won't continue to get ripe. Those kernels won't feed people. They won't feed wildlife. They won't fall into the lake to grow rice plants next year.
Fortunately, following the DNR's guidelines can help keep the rice healthy. And so far, the odds for successful ricing are looking good. Early reports from the DNR and tribal biologists suggest that the conditions across central and northern Minnesota range from fair to great. The wild rice season runs until the end of September. Stella Mayerhoff, Report for America Corps member for KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at kaxe.org. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
That's from the Black Keys, their new album that is out. It's their 14th album, all covers, reinterpretations of blues songs with original artists like Charles Fisher Jr. there, the song called It's a Dream. You'll hear more coming up, Headwaters, at 9 o'clock with your host, Malachi Coons. And today at 1 o'clock, our volunteer host is Mindy Conradi.
Oh, haven't heard Mindy for a while.
Yeah.
Nice. Support for KEXE comes from Rural Pathways, helping rural nonprofits and communities find funding, measure impact, strengthen strategy, and plan for the future. More information available on Facebook and at ruralpathways.org. Rural Pathways, bold solutions for quiet places.
We'd also like to thank Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. WoodworksMN.com. It is time to talk to Pam Perry. She joins us now. She's a non-game wildlife biologist from the Brainerd Lakes area. Pam, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Heidi.
Seems
good
like
good morning, John, and good morning, Bob.
Yeah. Got the whole crew here this morning ready to hear about the birds. I've been listening to the red-eyed vireo sing outside my garage, and she or he is undaunted by the fact that everybody else is shut up.
Yeah.
Yes, and the vireo just continues on and on. It's really an amazing thing because there's so little bird song now.
Yeah, yeah. It's remarkably quiet in the mornings. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not like a month ago.
It is. And this morning I wanted to talk a little bit about goldfinches because they are really obvious, and they're singing not much, just little snatches, but they make a lot of noise and they're really active. And I would guess that many of our listeners are seeing and hearing goldfinches all over the place. Why are they so obvious right now? Because they are one of the latest nesters in North America.
So when do they start nesting? If they just continue through the summer, or?
Well, they start in July.
Okay.
You know, most birds are starting in May. Yeah. So they start in July. They go through September, and the reason is because of their food source. They're seed eaters. They really like thistles and other weed seeds, and they use the plant down from milkweed and thistle to line their nests. And so the food for their young ones and the nesting thing, you know, this is towards the end of summer, which is where we're at right now. And they're coming to feeders. I'm seeing them regularly there. But I'm hearing them. They're just their little choo-choo-choo sounds kind of everywhere.
I would have thought of it as a potato chip, potato chip, potato chip.
And they'll fly over and they're saying that.
And I do have a bunch of them. I put out thistle seed for them, but they haven't discovered it yet. It's been a couple weeks and they're just like, whatever.
I've kind of given up on thistle, except for in the winter. If we get a big finch like red poles where we got hundreds of them, then I'll put out some thistle. But otherwise, I use sunflower chips, and they really like that. And a lot of birds like that. But the goldfinches, the house finches, purple finches all really go for the sunflower chips.
The chips, not the actual black oil sunflower seed where they have to work their way in. Yeah.
Correct. And I think I can say this because they're a sponsor. The Wild Bird Store in Brainerd has sunflower chips.
Ah, perfect. Yeah. Well, get out there and get some. They are they are really quite desirable by the bird. I have a hairy woodpecker. I have a family. And they all exhibit the same. They come on the feeder. And at first I thought they were, you know, they're knocking about, and I thought head left, head right. And I thought, are they looking for a particular seed? What they're looking for are those chips that are not in the seeds. They're like, oh, there's one. I'll eat that one. And
And because I have a chip feeder, the Harrys hang right on there. They really like them too.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, that's just kind of the tip of the day. If you don't feed sunflower chips, I would recommend it and getting a sunflower chip feeder.
Plus you don't have the mess with all the seed shells on the ground.
Well, and I have regular sunflowers too.
Yeah, I do too.
Because yeah.
In fact, that's my major source of food for them.
So I just find all the goldfinch activity right now really interesting. And it reminded me of, I kind of started looking at birds when I was a little girl. My grandmother had these little opera glasses, and she would look, she'd put out bread and different things for birds, as many people did back in those days. And she called them wild canaries.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah. And that was kind of the colloquial term for them. You know, it's, oh, we got wild canaries. Look at that, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, so. Totally. Well, what other birds are at your feeders or are attracting your attention right now?
The other thing is warblers and water. And I do want to blame Bob. It's very dry here in Brainerd.
Okay. Yeah.
Bob,
yeah.
Send us some rain. We were supposed to get a good half an inch or so last Friday, and it went north of us.
Yeah, we got some rain
we
here.
We got less than a tenth of an inch.
Yeah, that's not
and
enough.
No. And there are a lot of sandy soils here. I'm looking at the farm fields. And the beans don't look good at all. The corn is getting spiky, you know, it and the river is super low.
I'll bet it is. Yeah, it's low up here as well.
Yeah, yeah. And you've gotten more rain than we have.
We got that half inch that you missed out on. In fact, I had 5,300. So
you did. Yeah. So the warbler thing is that I've got my bird bath out there, and I've got a hose that drips some water into it. And I just started, Saturday, I started seeing some warbler activity coming into the water. So this is a really fun way to look for other birds like warblers that you otherwise aren't going to see or hear this time of year. And they're at eye level, so you can just look out at them. And I think, yesterday I had a yellow warbler and a Nashville come in. Mm. And then the day before I had a Blackburnian and a golden wing.
Wow.
And a Nashville again. Nashville is one of the most common ones I get.
Wonderful. What a thrill.
Yeah, but put some water out. Make sure you've got water out. It is, especially if you're here in the Brainerd area, Brainerd Lakes area, it is dry.
The Tennessee was it Nashville warbler or the Tennessee warbler? The Tennessees are they get out of here pretty fast, don't they? Early they're in the earliest to fly back south.
I think so. Yes, but I usually see a fair number of them as well.
Okay,
and I haven't seen one yet this year.
You know what I've discovered is that I have three different sources of water. And they're all in different locations, and birds prefer one over another.
Yeah, the chickadees
like this one, and the robins like that one, and yeah, it's kind of weird. But just putting out water, sometimes you'll think, well, why aren't I getting? You know, why does Pam get warblers and I don't? You might need to put out a bit more water in different locations to kind of give them options.
Yeah, and I want to remind people too, the classic bird bath set out on a lawn is good for robins and not
exactly
anything else. You need some perches, you need some cover, some shrubs or things by the water so the birds can come in there. And the warblers like to hide.
Yeah.
They'll come in, they're hiding behind the leaves and doing this, and they poke out, and then they'll finally come out to the water.
Yeah. We are talking with retired DNR wildlife biologist Pam Perry. We receive support from the Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Pam, you also made mention of what was it, toads and tree frogs? Or
toads and tree frogs. You know I like frogs and amphibians. And because it's so dry, I've been watering the plants a lot, my gardens, like almost every day. And on the deck, I have potted plants and I'm finding tree frogs on them. And I think it's because there's water there. And you know, I find them there before at the end of summer, but they need water. And what we have in this area is the gray tree frog. We also have Cope's gray tree frog. You can't tell them apart really by looking at them, but by their sounds. But we just call them all tree frogs. And they can be gray or they can be bright green. They're still all gray tree frogs. And then on the ground in my gardens, I've got toads. Big toads, little toads. You know, they're hopping around there. And, you know, of course, they're going for insects. And where there's moisture, and insects will come in there too, and they're going to be going after those.
They tend to run, yeah, and then they tend to use the roads at night when at this time of year. Yeah, I just that's one thing that kind of makes me not want to drive at night, because there's just you see frogs on the roads. They're crossing the road. It's like it's the better time to move around, because it's not so, you know, if you're a frog and your skin has to stay moist. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be wanting to hop around on a hot, sunny day. You're going to want to be around at night.
You're going to want to wait. And when the humidity is higher, yeah, you know, in the evenings. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So that's when they're moving around, and then I'm in my car and I'm like, oh my gosh. And it seems like they're more, yeah, try to avoid them, but it's like, oh my gosh, you can't, it seems like, this is the time of year when they're hopping around, the most from place to place.
Are they relocating for winter? Is that what's happening? Or,
well, I think yes, but they're also just going after food sources.
Okay,
moisture and food sources.
Now I have found a bunch of little tiny tree frogs, just babies. Some even still have their remnants of their tails, so they're just coming out of their tadpole stage. Have you ever seen one of those little tiny ones gray? They are almost always green.
Always green. The little ones tend to be green. Why is that? I don't know, John. Because when they get older, they can change color. They can absolutely be gray or green.
Do you know how long that process takes? Is it it's not like I'm green, I'm going to be gray in a minute.
I think it takes a little longer than that. But they can and do change their colors, and so do toads, for that matter.
What?
Because toad not as dramatic,
mm-hmm,
but they can be gray, dark gray, lighter gray. It can be reddish. And it's to blend in. And I know a couple of the toads I found the other day in one of my garden beds, they were almost exactly the color of the dirt.
Wow.
I've
seen toads with a lot of different gradients of color, and I didn't realize that it was something they could self-regulate. I thought it was something that, I'm a brown toad. Oh, I'm a gray toad. I'm a, you know, different shades.
I think they can self-regulate it according to the background, to the environment. And of course, some of them get darker when it's colder. Frogs are famous for that. But I don't know, with the toads this time of year, I think it's more the environment. And why these two, there were two of them. There was a big one and a smaller toad. They're both exactly the same color, and it was the color of the dirt.
Wonderful.
So, yeah. So just look for them, and especially if you're a gardener, if you're out there. The tree frogs, the toads are there, and just keep your eyes open for them.
They're certainly doing us all a favor by being there. They are munching down bugs that we don't even know about that they're happy to consume for us.
Yes, yes, they are. Another thing I wanted to mention is that I like to go by the college here in town, Central Lakes College, and because they have a couple of Martin houses. And I love to listen to the Martins, and the Martins come in there every year. They're gone. They're done. They've moved on.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's astonishing.
August is actually the beginning of fall migration.
Yeah.
So we're moving on and into that, because once the nesting is done, John, you mentioned earlier seeing young birds of all different kinds.
Oh, yeah.
I am too. Almost every kind. All the woodpeckers, the nuthatches, you know, the finches. I'm seeing them feed the youngsters, and they're all there. Well, and then they start moving, dispersing. They don't have to stay right on the nesting areas.
Yeah. Same thing is true of my bald eagle. Once the little one fledged and got accomplished, poof, gone. You know, not at the nest anymore, not coming to the nest, just spending the night wherever. And these young guys these young guys are doing the same thing. They found a source of food, and they're busy. I noticed, as you described to me so eloquently a couple of years ago, the little red patches migrating on the heads of the downies and hairies. Yeah, that's very cool. Check out your immatures and look and see where that red patch is on their heads. I've got a couple of red-bellied woodpeckers who, when they land and I look at them, I go, who are you? You know, no red on the head yet. None.
No red at all. And I saw one yesterday.
Got that smooth look of a dove when they land on they're about that color and they're smooth, you know, and I looked at it.
Yeah, they're kind of a brownish gray.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but, you know, otherwise they have the shape and the habits of a red belly, but no red. And
yeah.
They really look different.
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen with some of our amphibians? We know the birds, for the most part, are going to migrate. What are the amphibians going to do?
Well, they do all sorts of different things, and the toads will go underground. They are diggers anyways, and they go underground. The tree frogs will freeze in the leaf litter. I mean, isn't that cool?
Just like the wood frog.
The frogs in the lakes will just stay in the lakes and become dormant and absorb oxygen through their skin under the water.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Well, Pam, as always, time flies when you're on the air with us. It's been a joy. We'll talk to you again next month. I can't wait to find out what will be our subject, but I know I'll be interested in learning more. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and I will see you next month.
All right. Pam Perry, a retired DNR wildlife biologist, joins us on Tuesday mornings for a conversation about what's going on outside.
That's right. Don't forget, today is primary day, and we have lots of information for you if you're getting ready to go to the polls, and we'll be having a live blog update. Our reporters are out at the polls talking to people about why they are voting, and we'll be getting you also, if you follow that live blog tonight, you'll see the results that are coming in, and we'll be bringing you that tomorrow morning on the Wednesday Morning Show.
Programming is supported by North in Bloom, located in downtown Grand Rapids, providing floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year, also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More information at northinbloom.com.
Lots of things going on around our region, including some live music. Tonight, Simon Kropp is at Brainstorm Bakery in downtown Ely. It's the Listen In series. And tomorrow, known only locally, at Mississippi Music at the Bemidji Waterfront at 6 o'clock.
Wow, known only locally.
Yeah.
That's a flash from the past.
Yeah, out there on the on the lawn. So many people that gather for that series that happens every summer.
That'll be nice.
And county fair time this week, Beltrami County Fair in Bemidji, Carlton County Fair, and the Central St. Louis County Fair in Meadowlands.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, join us at KAXE.org.
Coming up, Malachi Coons brings us Headwaters, and then